Welcome to episode 24. I am Tammy. It's great to have you here. Thank you for being patient for this last two-week hiatus that we took. This one actually ended up pretty extensive, so I kind of needed last week to be able to put some finishing touches on it. Today I'm actually going to try a sound effect. Not really a sound effect, but to add some sound to this. So, you know, I'm hoping this was worth the wait for you. I do want to start out by thanking all of you, the listeners. This podcast now has, at the time of this recording, 1,100 plays with an established audience still of 45, but hey, I'm that's awesome. I love it so much. Also, we have new listeners from Ghana, Taiwan, and Japan. So, welcome to you also. As a reminder, the website is up and running. Visit womencommittingcrimes.com. All the episodes are there, as well as a page for suggestions and a page for listing all the women that I plan on talking about in future podcasts. I'm going to start doing bonus episodes probably in May, so don't look for them yet, but probably in May. Now, here's the catch with these, though. You have to follow my website to hear them. I won't be uploading them to Anchor or any other podcaster, nor will they appear on Women Committing Crimes Facebook group or on Twitter. They're going to be special bonus episodes for those who go to the website. I haven't decided if they should be criminals also or if they should be like women doing positive things in the world. You know, those heroines. I haven't decided that yet, so kind of let me know in any kind of way that you want to get in touch with me. I'll have more about that toward the end, about how you can get in touch with me. Let me know what you think I should do, you know. I could flip a coin either way. Either way is good with me. So just let me know. Along with that, I plan on adding a Secret Spy Women episodes that will only be available to those who support the podcast. These will be about women spies from all periods of time. People like Mata Hari, Ellen Rosenberg, that kind of stuff. This won't probably start until June 1st. Maybe after also. Luckily, summer break is coming up. Being a teacher, I can, you know, have a little bit more time in the summer. I'm still working on getting either a Patreon or some other means of monetizing on the website. They have their own ways. So your support, you supporting this, will unlock a Secret Spy Sister episode. That's kind of what I thought about calling it, but now that I hear it, I don't know. Y'all let me know, okay? Because, again, to my ears, it's all fine, but, you know. I'd like to know how y'all feel about it. All right, so on to Sada Abe, especially for our new Japanese listeners. All right. Now, again, I'm going to butcher these words. I'm hoping not as much because Japanese a lot of times is written almost phonetically, so it's a little bit easier than Chinese, but again, you know, I'm terrible, and I'm still working on it, though. But I also don't want to, like, insult anybody by trying to say these words, so I'm apologizing now for saying them incorrectly. So, anyway, Shigeyoshi Abe was adopted as a youth into the Abe family from the Chiba Prefecture, which encompasses the eastern outskirts of Tokyo, just to let you know where we're at. We're in Tokyo, Japan. Most of this happens in Tokyo. So, Shigeyoshi Abe is from the Chiba Prefecture. Again, encompasses the eastern outskirts of Tokyo and the rural Boso Peninsula. He was to help with their tatami mat making business, the Abe family. Tatami mats are flooring materials used in traditional Japanese rooms. They are often used in dojos, martial arts studios as well. The inner core was traditionally rice straw, but a more modern method is to use like polycysterine foam or wood chip boards. The core is covered with woven soft rush straw. This is from the Juncus effusus plant, which sounds silly, I know, but that's what it is. It's a perennial flower plant that grows next to like streams and ditches and those sort of water areas. The long sides of tatami mats usually have brocade or plain cloth edging. Everybody has seen these before, I'm sure. If you ever go into like a Japanese restaurant, they are somewhere, represented somewhere in there. Or you've seen them on movies and stuff like that. Shigeyoshi inherited the tatami shop and married Katsu. They had 8 children, with only 4 making it to adulthood, though. Sada, born in 1905, was number 7 of the 8 and number 4 of the survivor. At the time, her father Shigeyoshi was 52. Sada, being the second to youngest when she was a child, was very spoiled. She was encouraged to take singing lessons and shamisen lessons. Okay, so here's where my special effect. Not really effect, but you know, I'm going to play something for you comes in. Shamisens are a three-stringed instrument that's like a guitar, but not really like a guitar. It's kind of like a guitar. It's a stringed instrument. So I'm going to try to play this for you. So hopefully this comes across well. That's pretty good. So we've all heard that before too. If you've ever gone to like a more traditional Japanese or sushi restaurant or hibachi, whatever, they often can play that kind of music in the background. It's kind of beautiful. It's very kind of, I don't want to say introspective necessarily, but it is. It's got like a, I don't know, a mood to it for sure. And I find it intriguing that there's only three strings, and she's got like a plastic, not really a pick really, but it's like a bigger plastic thing that fits in her hand when she plays that. That was a geisha, modern geisha playing that. Absolutely beautiful. And she looks so calm and serene when she plays it. You know, it's really an interesting instrument. Anyway, let's see. So I'll also put pictures of these things on the website. This and as many pictures as I can of this whole thing. Anyway, when Sada was about 14, she started hanging out in the neighborhood with an unsavory group of kids, boys and girls. Here, at this time, the family lived in the Kanda neighborhood in Tokyo. Kanda was a ward until 1947. It was then merged with Kochimachi ward to form Chiyoda. At that same age of 14, Sada was raped by one of the boys she was hanging out with. A couple years later, her parents, which were stellar parents, by the way, one of Sada's brothers was in and out of jail. One of her sisters had a gambling problem. They came in and out of the house as adults. I mean, it's just, yeah, they weren't all that great. Anyway, so the Abbeys sold Sada to a geisha house in Yokohama in 1922. She was 17. So Yokohama is south of Tokyo. And it was one of the first Japanese ports to open to trade to Westerners in 1859. So for that, we can thank Commodore Matthew Perry, not the actor, but the Commodore, who in 1854 went to Japan, which had been an isolationist country for a very long time, kept out of Westerners' business, kept Westerners out of their business, and he basically forced Japan to open. When they did, by the way, Japan industrialized faster than any other nation in Asia. That kind of explains some stuff about World Wars I and II. Anyway, a very brief aside here about geisha also. It's brief. I say brief because the history of geisha is long and very fascinating. First, let me say to those who have a misconception about geisha, they are not prostitutes. Geisha are female performance artists and entertainers, and that's really what the word geisha means. Gei is art, and sha means person. They are trained in traditional Japanese dance, music, singing. They are also proficient conversationalists and hostesses, or hosts. Geisha actually started out as a male profession. Anyway, geisha entertain at parties known as ozashiki. Some have actually become, quote, living national treasures, end quote, which is the highest artistic award attainable in Japan. Most begin training when they are very young and placed into geisha houses called okiya, the geisha is trained by a big sister, a geisha who adopts her as a little sister. The training is very extensive. Geisha was established as a profession in about the 19th century. There were geisha districts in most larger towns and cities in Japan, and geisha were registered within that city. They became style and fashion icons. They wear big, long, beautiful kimonos that are just have all kinds of, I mean, they're silk and they have all kinds of landscapes in them. They're just the things that are on them are just so absolutely beautiful. They have elaborate hairstyles with hair jewelry, and they wear the white makeup. Some wealthy would have a daughter. Sometimes if the wealthy had several daughters, one of them would enter to become a geisha at around the age of 3 and begin training. But sometimes a girl would be sold to a geisha house, like in this case, or if you ever read the book Memoirs of a Geisha. Although it is fiction, obviously it's historical fiction, right? So it is based upon this type of thing. So I know I'm not doing geisha enough justice here, but for time constraints, I do, you know, this is where I'm going to kind of leave it off, just so you know what she was going to go into. But I highly recommend doing some research if you're interested. Lots of movies, so much stuff out there. Anyway, so Sada was sold to a geisha house at the age of 17, which is not a good age to start something that takes a long time to learn either, especially she's kind of rough around the edges. So she was not good at it. She never made it past a lower level of geisha. Instead, she decided to change careers and became a prostitute. Prostitutes often wear fancy kimono too, by the way. Only their obi, that big sash that they have around their waist, is tied in front, whereas a geisha's is tied in back. Prostitution back in the 1920s in Japan was regulated, and all prostitutes had to get like a physical exam to be legally licensed. Unfortunately for Sada, she had contracted syphilis. Yes, syphilis. I looked this up because we all know a famous gangster who died from complications of untreated syphilis, and I kind of wanted to know, because, you know, about the time period that he died also, I kind of wanted to know what types of treatments were available, because this syphilis is nasty. Thank the goddesses for penicillin, right? Seriously, because syphilis is a disease that's caused by a bacterium called Treponema, sorry, my curse is not, pallidum. The most common way to spread is through unprotected sex. Yeah, you got a drippy weenie? Gross. Although you can get it also by kissing someone with a sore on their lip, just like a gonorrhea or herpes called a chancre. Why you would kiss somebody with all that on there? Chancres are gross, right? I do want to say here, though, I want to clear this up. Make sure you understand this. You cannot get syphilis from toilets, bathtubs, clothing, eating utensils, doorknobs, swimming pools, or hot tubs. But if left untreated, it causes organ damage, neurological problems, cardiovascular problems, insanity, kinda, and death. In its early stages, one shot of penicillin or its equivalent, if you're allergic, takes it away. You know, thank you, Alexander Fleming, right? And if you're allergic, that would have sucked back then. but luckily they do have alternatives now, for sure. But it was not used for syphilis, even though he discovered that earlier, but it was not used for syphilis until 1947. Then they realized, you know, it works for syphilis first time. If you get it early enough, the shot of penicillin works the first time. It kills that bacterium right out. The longer you wait, the more shots you have to get, all that kind of stuff, and sometimes it's too late. Gonorrhea is the same thing. It takes it out. Now, here's the thing, though. I'm not saying go out and get these things because, well, you got penicillin, it's all okay. What I'm saying is slap a raincoat on that junk, right? Because that little device keeps you from ruining your life in two different ways. One, unwanted pregnancy. Two, definitely unwanted STDs. So there's my public service announcement for the day. Anyway, before penicillin, though, just so you know, there was all kinds of herbal crap. You know how that goes. No offense to homeopathy or whatever, but let's get real. None of that stuff got rid of syphilis, right? Neither did the mercury that they often would use also, which of course caused more problems than it solved. But in the early 20th century, silvarsen was used. It was the first antimicrobial agent that was discovered by Sahachiro Hata in 1909. It wasn't as good as penicillin, of course, but it was better than mercury and all that other crap. So this would have been what Sada got for her syphy. I couldn't find out actually if that was what she got, but since penicillin wasn't used till after 1947, and this was the 1920s, I assume that was what she had, was the silvarsen. All right, well, Sada worked at Osaka's Tobita Brothel District, which is still a thing, by the way. There are like three streets, I guess, in Osaka that make up the hooker district. Sada was not very good at this either, and was considered actually a troublemaker. She stole money from clients, attempted to leave the brothel, which I guess you can't do without permission. Sada eventually did escape and began working as a waitress, but made not very much money, so then she went back to being a hooker, a prostitute. This time, though, she was on her own and unlicensed, which is really risky, because when you're a licensed prostitute back then, again, physical exams to make sure you're all right, two, protection against clients, right? I mean, that's the whole point of brothels now, as well as, you know, that's what pimps, I guess, tell people. You know, the whole point is the protection of the girls, but or guys. Sato went back to Tokyo with her after her mother died in 1933, and then her father died shortly after 1934. Sorry about my voice. I don't know what's up with it this evening. I think I'm just really tired. it was kind of a long day. But anyway, Sato went back to prostitution as her profession in Tokyo. She was later caught up in a police raid in that same year, 1934, but was bailed out by a friend of a brothel owner. This friend was, I'm going to try this, Kinosuke Kasahara. Sato became his mistress. He set her up with a house and gave her spending money. He said she was strong, meaning insatiable. So listen to this guy, okay? He said, quote, "She was really strong, a really powerful one. Even though I'm pretty jaded, she was enough to astound me. She wasn't satisfied unless we did it 2, 3, or 4 times a night. To her, it was unacceptable unless I had my hand on her private parts all night long. Damn. At first, it was great, but after a couple of weeks, I got a little exhausted," end quote. Sato wanted him to leave his wife and marry her, but he refused. He also refused to let Sato have another lover. So she left him and went to Nagoya, a city on Honshu, the biggest of the Japanese islands. At his deposition, when the police questioned him about Sato, he was kind of bitter about her. All right, so he said, quote, "She's a slut and a whore, and as what she has done makes clear, she's a woman whom men should fear," end quote. So here's the thing. Dudes, not all of them, okay, so calm down. But dudes like this guy, right, want you to be slutty and whore, you know, for them. Oh, wow, it's so cool. But the minute that she becomes independent or decides, you know what, you're not doing it for me or whatever, then they take those same words and flip it and try to make that like a curse or, wow, look at that terrible person, you know, that terrible slut, that terrible whore. It's really fascinating that that happens, you know. It's like one, it's in one way it's a good thing, but if it's against, then it flips. It's such a creepy dude kind of thing. And this guy kind of came across to me as like really creepy. It seems that insecure men do that. Anyway, about Kinosuke, Sato said, quote, "He didn't love me. He treated me like an animal. He was the kind of scum who would then plead with me when I said we should break up," end quote. Which sounds like that type of dude too, right? Being rude and then turning tables, you know, when she really does leave, you know, totally trasher, right? Well, she left, like I said, and she went to Nagoya in 1935. She worked as a maid at a restaurant, which I assume this means like it's like the equivalent of a custodial service. She started dating a customer named Goro Omiya, a professor and banker who wanted to be in the Japanese parliament. Sato left Nagoya and went back to Tokyo and met up with Goro there. He followed her there. He suggested she open her own restaurant, and Sato became an apprentice to an apprentice at Yoshideya Restaurant in 1936. Here we go. The owner was Kichizo Ishida. He was 42. Ishida, this is where it gets crazy. Ishida and Sato began a sexual relationship and went on like a 2-week binge of drinking, moving around different tea houses and hotels, and tons and tons and tons of sex. I mean, lots of sex. Tons. To the point where they would be doing it, the maid would come in to give fresh towels, and they wouldn't even stop, that they would just keep on going. And these two people got crazy. Absolutely crazy. When asked about it, though, Sato said, quote, "It is hard to say exactly what was so good about Ishida, but it was impossible to say anything bad about his looks, his attitude, his skill as a lover, the way he expressed his feelings. I had never met such a sexy man," end quote. So I couldn't find any credible pictures of Ishida, but, you know, we've all known somebody probably that's got just this, he is not maybe the most handsome or most beautiful or whatever, like the hottest person on the planet, but there's something about them that is just so ridiculously sexy, and that's probably how she's feeling about Ishida. Again, I couldn't find any pictures, so I can't even judge. I feel kind of cheated by that. Anyway, she eventually falls in love with Ishida. She wanted him to leave his wife, here we go again, but which he wouldn't. Sato began drinking heavily out of jealousy of Ishida's wife. Then she started plotting his death a week before she actually killed him. She had watched a play about a woman who stabs her lover with a knife. So Sato pawned some of her kimonos. Kimonos bring a lot of money. They're very expensive. And she bought a kitchen knife. At one of the hotels they went to, Sato said, quote, I pulled the kitchen knife out of my bag and threatened him, as had been done in the play I had seen, saying, "Kichi, you wore that kimono just to please one of your favorite customers. You bastard, I'll kill you for that." Ishida was startled and drew away a little, but he seemed delighted with it all, end quote. Damn, so come to find out, dude was into, like, anger danger sex, right? From that point on, during sex, Sato would put the knife to the base of Ishida's dick and would say that she would make sure he never had sex with anyone else again. They eventually added choking to their creepy violent sex, too, so they're totally about the, you know, violence and sex thing, both of them. They would choke each other at the same time. I've heard of it, like, it's like it was rumored, I guess it's autoerotic asphyxiation, so, like, the rumor, maybe it's true about the actor David Carradine, as well as Michael Hutchence from INXS. That's the first time when those two died, and they didn't die that far apart, if I remember correctly, but anyway, especially David Carradine, when I heard about that, that was the first time I'd ever heard about autoerotic asphyxiation. Let me just say this. If you're into that, autoerotic asphyxiation, you probably need to go see a psychologist, because near-death experience should never give you an orgasm. I fear for you. I really, really do. So again, if that is something that you're into, maybe you should go talk to somebody about that. And I don't mean to make you feel bad. I just think that, you know, I just don't want other people to, like, you know, die from this. I mean, I guess it's not as popular as it was for a while there, but honest to God, I fear for you. Anyway, May 17th, 1936, the night before he died, Ishida's face became distorted after the choke sex and wouldn't go back to normal. How much choke sex do you have to do to make that happen, where the muscles in your face freeze in that distorted, contorted O face, right? O and choke face. Anyway, so he took 30 tablets of Calmotin, a sedative, and said to Sada as he was drifting off to sleep, quote, "You'll put the cord around my neck and squeeze it again while I'm sleeping, won't you? If you start to strangle me, don't stop, because it is so painful afterward," end quote. Holy shit. Is he, like, basically asking her to kill him? That's what it kind of sounds like, but I don't know. They're all kinds of weird, fucked up, drunk all the time, and having this weird... You know, I mean, if you choke like that, it does kill brain cells pretty darn quick. So, you know, he's not thinking, and he's on 30 sedatives. Oh my God, these people are crazy. So guess what? She does it. 2 a.m. May 18th, she strangled him with her obi. Quote, "After I had killed Ishida, I felt totally at ease, as though a heavy burden had been lifted from my shoulders, and I felt a sense of clarity," end quote. Okay, so that reminds me of the TV show Dexter. And how powerful he said he feels, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I only watched, like, the first couple seasons, but that's just kind of what it reminded me of when she says this. All right, this is where it gets even more ridiculously nuts. Seriously. After he was dead, Sato lay down with his body for several hours. Okay, that's not unheard of. People have done that. Okay. Then she cut off his penis and balls with the same damn knife she always threatened him, threatened to do that with. Then she wrapped his junk in a magazine cover. With the blood from that, with junk blood, she wrote, quote, "We, Sada and Kichi Ishida, are alone," end quote. She wrote it on his left thigh and on the bedsheet. Then she carved her name into his left arm. Sada then put on his underwear, stuck his junk in her pocket, and left him for the maids to find. I'm going to let this sink in just for a second. I'm sorry. I just... Crazy. The maids discovered his body, of course, phoned the cops, and the search was on for Sada. Circumstances of Ishida's death, of course, became a national sensation, which became known as the Abe Sada Panic. I remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, the whole Lorena Bobbitt national sensational thing. And we'll get to her. I'm not going to go into detail right now. I'm not going to go into that because she's on my list. So eventually we'll get to her too. So the next day, May 19th, 1936, with Ishida's junk in her pocket, Sada went shopping and saw a movie. Then May 20th, 1936, she stayed at an inn under a false name. She wrote farewell letters to her old lover, Omiya, another friend, and to Ishida. Then she planned to commit suicide, but she had one more gross thing to do first. Sada said, quote, "This is so gross. I felt attached to Ishida's penis and thought that only after taking leave from it quietly could I then die. I unwrapped the paper, holding them, and gazed at his penis and scrotum. I can't read it like that. It's funny. I put his penis in my mouth. I'm sorry. And even tried to insert it inside me. It didn't work. However, I had to start. It didn't work, however, though I kept trying and trying. Then I decided that I would flee to Osaka, staying with Ishida's penis all the while. In the end, I would jump from a cliff on Mount Ikoma while holding onto his penis. End quote. I'm sorry. Oh my God, this bitch be crazy. Okay, I there's a part of me that says, wow, she is so fucked up. I really kind of feel, I want to feel bad for her. But at the same time, I don't, because you'll hear why in just a little bit. But honest to God, okay, so she puts his cut off 3-day old penis in her mouth and then tries to, you know, put it in her JJ more than once. I'm sorry, I can't get over this one. Sada was arrested May 20th, 1936. She was interrogated in 8 different sessions. The police asked her why she cut off Ishida's junk. She said, quote, because I couldn't take his head or body with me. I wanted to take the part of him that brought back to me the more vivid memories, end quote. The police asked why she killed him. She said, quote, I loved him so much, I wanted him all to myself. But since we were not husband and wife, as long as he lived, he could be embraced by other women. I knew if I killed him, no other women could ever touch him again, so I killed him. End quote. This one's really hard for me not to just roll around the floor laughing. Yeah, that. Okay. When the story broke, there were rumors that Ishida's dick was huge. Of course, why would this woman want to do this? Unless he was John Holmes. If you don't know who that is, well, just look that up. The police officer who arrested Sada said, quote, Ishida's was just average. Abe told me, quote, within a quote, size doesn't make a man in bed. Technique and his desire to please me were what I liked about Ishida, end quote, After Sada's arrest, Ishida's junk was taken to Tokyo's University Medical School's Pathology Museum and put on public display until after World War II. I don't know why. I couldn't find why. Then, get this, it disappeared. And no one knows where it is today. Again, I guess it's something that you would want to, like, steal. It's like those, yeah, those 13 pieces of art, you know, stolen from the museum in Boston, right? It's just gonna be out there. I mean, did they? I don't know. They must have put it in, like, formaldehyde or something. I don't know. I'm sorry I'm laughing through this. I really am, but I'm not. Because this one is just so bizarre to me. It's so psychologically what the fuck. I mean, Catherine Knight was psychologically what the fuck, but she was just, whoa. You know, she was just like an evil killer person. This woman, I mean, seriously, it's like, wow. Get this, okay? So at her trial, she says, quote, this kills me. The thing I regret most about this incident, like there's not 100 things, but the thing I regret most about this incident is that I have come to be misunderstood as some kind of sexual pervert. There had never been a man in my life like Ishida. There were men I liked and with whom I slept with without accepting money, but none made me feel the way I did toward him, end quote. Again, what the fuck? The thing she regrets the most is that people will think she's a pervert. Not killing him. That's not the thing she regrets the most. Not cutting his junk off and not being able to have sex with him. That's not what she regrets the most. It's just that people might think she's a sexual pervert. And here's the thing. I like the man in my life, but I'm not going to kill him and cut his junk off. Well, okay. So, in December of 1936, Sada Abe was convicted of murder and mutilation of a corpse, of course. Yeah. But then she was only sentenced to 6 fucking years in prison. And get this. Okay, so she was sent to Tochigi Women's Penitentiary as prisoner number 11. I don't understand why there's 11 people, but And then her sentence was commuted in 1940, and she was released May 17th, 1941. So she served 5 years out of a 6-year prison sentence, and only but 6 years for murder and mutilation of a corpse. If she would have done that in this country, holy shit, she'd still be there. Well, died in prison anyway. But oh my God. I'm sorry. This one's cracking me up. And what an anniversary. May 17th is when he's like, I know you're going to kill me. May 17th, 1934, or 36, I'm sorry, is when he was sure that she was going to wrap that around his neck and kill him. Oh, my God. All right, anyway, after her release, Sada published an autobiography in 1947. There were so many books about her, she thought that it would be best if she wrote one, too. She sat for many interviews throughout the late 1940s, and then she decided to live a low-profile life until after 1952, working in a restaurant. Then she fully disappeared from public life in 1970. It's rumored that she went to live and die in Kasai Nunnery, died in the 70s. Nobody's for sure. Tons of books. Like I said, tons of books besides her own autobiography. There's movies, plays, TV shows. I mean, this story is so much fun when you think about it. And, you know, I guess I should feel sad for Ishida or whatever. But I kind of don't because he was kind of a creep, too. And not that he deserves death for being a creep, but, you know, he basically asked her to. In some kind of weird way. But, you know, okay, so feeling bad for him, but honest to God, she was crazy. So anyway, Sada Abe, there it is, a woman committing a crime. So this podcast, I'm going to get over this in just a second because it cracked me up. I'm sorry. This podcast is brought to you by the podcast This Is Why You're Wrong with Stephen Everett, John DeBruin, and Alex Alcantar. In their podcast, they make lists about everything from, like, the latest one was top 10 superhero movies. One before that, top 10 Kanye songs. Then they argue about why their list is superior. It was an inspiration for one of the inspirations for this podcast with their episode about top 10 bad guys. I was a guest on that one. It is a lot of fun. Check it out on Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts and compare your own list to theirs. I want to thank Byron Alexander for allowing me to use his music at the beginning and end of this podcast. The song at the beginning is the instrumental version of Very Well I Know, and the song at the end is the instrumental version of Who. Both songs are on his fantastic album Square One. You can find that on Amazon, Spotify, iTunes, YouTube. He has a YouTube channel. Anywhere you find and buy music. It's a great album. I highly recommend it. Fantastic CD. Pop it in your car. It'll make traffic go so much easier. I also want to thank my husband, Doug, who designed the logos for this podcast, as well as the other podcast I have, Off Kilter, No Filter. Off Kilter, No Filter is a podcast with me and Byron Alexander, where we discuss everything and anything. Our latest episode will be uploaded this Thursday. It's about the influence of YouTube. It also has a guest on there. We have had several guests. Sometime I'd like to try to have one on here. I just haven't figured out how to do that. Maybe I just need a yes man. Like, this episode would have been hilarious to have somebody else go, oh my God. Anyway, come listen to Off Kilter No Filter on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other podcaster you use, as well as you can hit us up at follow us on Twitter at No Kilter, also the Facebook group Off Kilter No Filter, and give us 5 stars in Apple Podcast. Also, if you have questions or comments, suggestions for an episode, email me womencommittingcrimes@gmail.com. Fuck. Or comment on the website at womencommittingcrimes.com. Remember, I'm going to give me some suggestions for the spies. Give me some suggestions for the bonus. I'll even read your email or comments on the podcast unless you would rather remain anonymous. If so, make sure you tell me, right? Please support this podcast. Go to anchor.fm/Elizabeth. Let me start that over again. Go to anchor.fm/Elizabeth-Chase and click the support button. You can make a one-time donation or sponsor on a monthly basis. It would be greatly appreciated. Hit me up on Twitter Follow me on Twitter at CrimesWomen or check out the Facebook group, Women Committing Crimes Facebook group. Give me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, please. Make it your favorite on other sites. Give me thumbs up everywhere you go. That would be fantastic. I'm also an iHeartRadio, so give us fantastic ratings, please. Now, let's go into that fishbowl. But here, I want to say this next, though. So I was looking at my list of women, and what I noticed is it is so heavily USA and Great Britain heavy. So I really need some suggestions. So I have listeners from all over the world right now. If you are in Ghana, email me and tell me about a woman criminal in your country. If you are, I have a couple that's, yeah, again, Great Britain, Ireland, and all that kind of stuff. I need others. I need people from Ghana to let me know. I need people from Thailand. Let me know. I need people from Puerto Rico. You're American? Bring it. Russia, I only have a couple of years and most of them are spies. Go fucking figure, right? Finland, Denmark, Colombia, Sweden, United Arab Emirates, Spain, Latvia, Israel, Indonesia, Brazil. I already said Ghana, Taiwan, did Japan. Got a couple more from Japan. Czech Republic, right? Canada, I got a couple for you. Australia, got another one coming for you. But those countries, y'all hit me up. Tell me what you would like to hear from your country. It's hard for me to branch out sometimes, and I really, really want to get more international. I need more women. All right. Well, let's check out what's going to be next. Here we go. Oh, the fishbowl. Yes. Opening the paper, and it's Maria. See, I used to be able to know how to pronounce Italian words. Maria, is it Licciardi? Mafia boss, right? Maria Licciardi, L-I-C-C-I-A-R-D-I. I used to know the rules for grammar in Italian. I'm obsessed with Mike Patton. He speaks Italian, so I was trying to teach myself that. So anyway, talk to y'all next week. Bye.